Okay, we'll bring the Mining and Outdoor Recreation Committee to order. Representative Johnson, have you had a chance to look over the minutes?
Yes, I did, and I moved to approve.
Representative Johnson moves the minutes. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, I wish we could have got started a little earlier, but that's just the way it goes. We're up against deadlines. We've got a number of bills to get through today. Hopefully things will move quickly and smoothly. Hopefully we don't have a lot of testimony on the number of bills that we have. So to start off, Representative Anderson moves House File 1448 and be referred to the Environment Finance Committee. Is that right, Representative Anderson?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Background of this bill is that I was approached by some commissioners out of Tahn County because of a couple instances where there's been some land that's been donated to the DNR through groups like Pheasants Forever, and they have been turning the land around, been giving this stuff up for pilt, and they'd like to see some of these lands given back to, or put back out onto the private market. So they can actually be collecting taxes. So their proposal was to take these type lands, not lands that have been given to donated for conservation type programs to the DNR, but just other donations. Again, for like the example was for Pheasants Forever. And in speaking with the commissioner, I said, well, what would you like to do with this? He says, well, how about if we go back the last 10 years of these type donated lands? I said, what about the proceeds? He says, that's up to you. And I thought, you know, in the spirit of things, working with this commissioner, why don't we do this? We're all talking about raising all of these funds for roads and bridges. What a good time to do that. Take some of this money and donate it to roads and bridges. That's the gist of the bill, Mr. Chair, and I stand for questions.
Okay, very good. Questions, members? Seeing none, anyone in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kathy Lewis, Assistant Director, Lands and Minerals, Department of Natural Resources. The department is quite concerned about this bill. Since January 2005, the department's received 240 acquisitions by gift. That totals 28,098 acres. Now, some of them do have deed restrictions in there. We get Pheasants Forever is likely property that was acquired with Lassard Sam's dollars or LCCMR dollars, and they have funding restrictions that would prohibit the clear title. But we have properties such as there's examples of like 11 scientific and natural areas. There's seven donations involving forestry land. There's two in parks, Tetagooch State Park and Lake Moriah State Park. And then we are estimating about 5,000 acres of wildlife management areas that would be impacted by this bill. It would also impact our donors. They expect the land to be used for conservation purposes. And we also often use RIM match funding for this, and that could affect that. And also when they make a tax donation, we also guarantee when we accept it that it's retained in that purpose for at least 2 years, or the donor would have tax purposes. So that's our concern about the bill. If there are any questions or follow up on that, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions, members? Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Lewis. One question I would have is, what is the, I know you probably don't have this, but it's information I'd like to receive at some point. Since 2000, roughly, what is the total number of acreage that DNR has acquired and basically removed from the tax roll across the state? And also if DNR has the funding to actually properly maintain all this acreage that they've acquired over the years?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I could certainly get you the statistics of the number of acres acquired. We have them back in the office. And we've also had a report in last year, too, that looked at the issue of the cost for maintaining the acres that we have. And I can refer that report to you, too.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson, you're talking about as received as gifts.
Not just gifts. Mr. Chair, I'm talking about the total number of acres that DNR has acquired.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Representative McNamara, or Representative Considine. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is specifically just about the gifts. When people give land to the DNR, are they able to specify what the land is going to be used for, and if so, for how long? And would we be in, I guess there's a couple questions in there. Would there be open to lawsuits if that changed?
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the donor can specify how they want the land to be used. As part of the discussions with the landowner, we do inform the landowner the intent of what we plan to use it for, whether it's a scientific nature, a state park, state forest. They can put a deed restriction in on a gift that says it must be used for this purpose. And if you have that kind of deed restriction, yes, they could sue you if you violated that deed restriction. They could also put a reversionary clause in there that says if we use it for another purpose, it reverts back to them. But that would be a kind of property that would not have clear title, and under the language written in this bill, we wouldn't be able to sell those particular parcels.
Representative Considine?
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further? Oh, Representative Urizo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I hear correctly? Is some of the land that would fall under this currently part of designated state parks or other types of property like that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are some properties in Teteguch State Park and Lake Moriah State Park that would fall under the provisions of this bill that we would be required to sell.
Representative Urizo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And do you have some feel for what, you know, rough fraction of the property had some sort of statement from the DNR to the donors about what the intended use was going to be?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's in every conversation we have with the donor of what the intent of what the DNR plans to use with the property. That's part of our discussion with them because that's often very important to the donor.
Representative Urizo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for any of these properties, are you aware that the intent as understood between the DNR and the donor was that it would be sold and the money going into other purposes?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the donor understands that the DNR is going to be using the land and managing the land for the public purpose. On occasion, and it's pretty rare, on occasion we get a piece of property where the donor recognizes that the DNR would actually sell it, and that's part of the discussion, too. It doesn't happen more than maybe once a decade, but it has happened.
Representative Urizo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was trying to bring to light the fact that whether or not there's legal terms on the deed, there's a certain good faith kind of bargaining during these transactions. And I, for one, am not particularly eager to go against that. I don't think that, I've personally enjoyed both Lake Moriah and Teteguch State Park. Our state parks and other wildlife resources are some of the treasures of this state. And so I would oppose this.
Representative Moline.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
What was the motion on this?
We're going to send it to the Environment Finance Committee.
Can I ask for a roll call, please?
Okay. Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted some clarity. I mean, Representative Urizo pointed out that there could be some good faith negotiations that go on between the parties, but once you have clear title to the property, the previous owner can't dictate what's done with the property, regardless of what the discussions are. But once the DNR has clear title to the property, they can do with it what they please. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Lewis?
Representative, legally, you are correct. We have had that issue in the last few years where we have sold some property and then the family members have been very upset with us, and that 2 years ago led to a change in the law that said whenever we have a piece of property received by donation, we have to have the landowner specifically say whether or not we can sell the land in the future. And so that led to a change in law 2 years ago because of this issue, and the landowner being upset with us, family members being upset with us when we did sell it.
Anything further? Any further discussion? Anyone else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Okay. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Anzels.
Aye.
Representative Considine.
No.
Representative Cornish. Representative Dill.
Yep.
Representative Hertas.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Keel. Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Lewick.
Aye.
Representative McNamara. Representative Moline.
Aye.
Representative Metza. Representative Yaruso.
No.
The vote being 9 ayes and 2 nays, the vote is passed and referred to the Environment Finance Committee. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Green. Welcome to the committee, Representative Green. The chair will move House File 1325 to be held over for possible inclusion in a bill at a later date. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1325 is a pretty simple bill. It doesn't look like it when you first look at the bill, but in essence, what it does is it turns over authority from the tax forfeited lands back to the counties to be able to be sold or kept according to the county board's wishes. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm sure people have read it. If they have questions, I'll stand for questions.
Questions for Representative Green members? Seeing none, anyone in the audience that would like to speak for or against Representative Green's bill? For or against? Any closing remarks? Anything further, Representative Green?
Well, I hope you'll support it.
Okay. Thank you. Well, House File 1325 will be held over for possible inclusion. Representative Green moves House File, the chair will move House File 1173 for possible inclusion. Representative Green, explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This also is a pretty simple bill, probably maybe a little more controversial. As you know, there's areas in the northeast part of the state that are considered 80% areas, I guess they're called. And there's so much wetland up there that when any mitigation has to occur, there's no more land for them to take in that area, so they're jumping across boundaries and coming into mine. And so I'm hoping that with this bill, we will try to eliminate some of that. What it does is it allows for, in the case of mining, if they're going to disrupt wetlands, and that they will have a certain amount of time to put those back, or forest. There's a 30-year provision in there. That doesn't mean it has to be 30 years, but what that is I was trying to come up with something that would allow them to regrow a forest, or you know, or even a wetland. You can't build an ecosystem in a year. But the bill is actually pretty simple otherwise, and I will also stand for questions on it.
Any questions, member? Yep, Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as you know, what would be the applicable federal law for this under the Clean Water Act?
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair and Representative Yaruso, there will be some issues with federal law, and I understand that. This bill is going to be laid over. My hope is to get some conversation going on it, and we are legislators in the state of Minnesota, and we have a problem here. We have an area in our state that has more wetlands than they can eat. They just can't gain any more in that area. So and right now, there is no other option. And we also don't know what the goals are. Minnesota has 51 million acres, and we're exceeding now 25% of that into public ownership. And we also have about 10 million acres of wetlands in Minnesota. And so we need to come up with, I believe we need to come up with at least a goal of what the intended consequences are. Is it a third? Is it a half? At what point do we say we have enough public lands, it's time to keep some of this land in private ownership?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Urusso.
This isn't about whether it's in public ownership or not. This is about whether or not wetlands are destroyed or restored. It's not about diverting it to public ownership. And with a not replacing them for 30 years does not replace the impact of the change in habitat at the time. So having been on the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee before, I understand that the issue about the difficulty of finding suitable replacement lands. However, skirting federal law and shifting it 30 years out into the future is not really a particularly good solution as far as I'm concerned. And it's confusing the issue to start talking about the public lands and whatnot at that point, because that's not what this is about. This is about the requirements to retain the wetlands that we've got and restore them as you go along, and we're not allowed to just get rid of them. So I understand you. You know, if you're laying it over and wanting to go on with the conversation, that's my contribution to the conversation, I guess.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion, members? Okay, we're going to take some testimony. We've got some folks that would like to speak to the bill. Mr. Hottinger? Senator Hottinger? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is John Hottinger. I represent the North Star chapter of the Minnesota Sierra Club. Mr. Chair, if you would permit it, it would be helpful to explain the Sierra Club position, which will become much briefer if you permit this, if Ms. Burkham could testify with me.
Sure.
Because what I learned from her expected testimony, I think, mediates some of the concerns.
Sure, that'd
we
be
have.
Fine. Yep. We'll have to pull up another chair. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Good afternoon, Chairman. My name is Jill Baskey, and I am the Natural Resource Scientist at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. MCU uses science and law to protect Minnesota's environment and the health of its people. Since the Wetland Conservation Act was passed in 1991, MCA has long been involved in working on wetland issues. I'm here today to voice MCA's concerns about this proposed change in the Wetland Conservation Act. The bill before you would significantly weaken the Wetland Conservation Act and make mining-related wetland replacement less ecologically successful and more cumbersome. Why would this bill make wetland replacement less successful? Under most circumstances, the person who would like to destroy a wetland is required by both state and federal law to replace that wetland somewhere else on the landscape. Replacement often takes the form of restoration of a wetland that has been drained. Timing of the wetland replacement is critical. Replacing wetland function and values within a watershed either before or as soon as practicable following the wetland destruction is vital to supporting healthy rivers and lakes and the countless species that rely on them. Wetlands store groundwater that provide water to rivers in times of drought. Wetlands also offer important habitat for breeding fish, pollinators, birds, and many wildlife. They attenuate floodwaters, retain sediment, contaminants, and nutrients that would otherwise negatively impact the condition and function of downstream waters. If a wetland is destroyed, all those functions I just mentioned are also destroyed. The loss of thousands of acres of wetlands without replacing them prior to or immediately following wetland destruction could have significant effects on the health of Minnesota's water resources. Because wetlands are no longer providing vital ecosystem services, taxpayers and government will have to pick up the cost of clean water, restore habitat, and mitigate the effects of floods. For that reason, immediate replacement of wetlands within the watershed, rather than replacement 30 years down the road, is vital. This bill would also make wetland replacement more cumbersome and make it harder for agencies to cooperate. As I mentioned, both state and federal law regulate impacts to wetlands. Under the Clean Water Act, the Corps of Engineers, with oversight from the EPA, regulates the discharge of dredge and fill material in the many wetlands and other waters in Minnesota. As much as possible, federal, state, and local agencies work together to provide transparent and understandable permitting process. This bill would make that cooperation next to impossible for mining-related wetland impacts. Even if the Wetland Conservation Act is amended as proposed in this bill, under federal rule, mining companies, or any permittee for that matter, would still be required to replace wetland losses either before or immediately following wetland destruction. Rather than making the world of environmental permitting easier to navigate, this bill would make it more confusing, as mining companies would be required to comply with two vastly different wetland replacement requirements. In summary, the bill in front of you would not improve mining-related wetland replacement, simplify, or speed up permitting. Instead, it would result in a regulatory environment that is more confusing and cumbersome, and a significant temporal loss of ecosystem services that wetlands provide. Thank you for your attention, Mr. Chairman. That completes my testimony.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Manziel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, you know, I could ask you, and I'm tempted to, have you ever been on one of those cool, clear, pristinely clear northern Minnesota lakes adjacent to a taconite mine? But I won't ask you that. I won't ask you why you have ruined your water in the bottom two-thirds of the state, but now you're preoccupied with saving ours. But I won't ask you about that. What I will ask you is, what is your organization doing to preserve, protect, and grow jobs in northeastern Minnesota so we can live there?
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Representative Anzell. Actually, I've been on the cool, pristine lakes of northern Minnesota. And I've been there in the wintertime and heard the ice freeze, one of the greatest natural events had the opportunity to experience. But more importantly, if you would have waited a little bit, the discussion that Ms. Burkham presented has influenced the Sierra Club's position, because we were going to be opposed to this bill because of the first half of her testimony. But the second half is what's most important. If this bill were to pass, it wouldn't save anything. It would make it more complex to deal with the wetland requirements of state and federal law. We were concerned, and the Sierra Club's got 14,000 members, including in northern Minnesota, certainly. And we have the largest grassroots organization in the state of Minnesota to preserve and protect. And most importantly, we have a citizen-driven process to come up with our policy. And that citizen-driven process is inclusive, it's lengthy, it's thoughtful, it's based on deliberation of citizens and based on input and information. And when the decision was made last week by our citizens to oppose this legislation, it was frankly because we had a simplistic view. We thought, oh, they're just trying to avoid this for 30 years. That's wrong. And thanks to Ms. Burkham's testimony, we know that's wrong. So I'm adapting what they did, because what we want to do, and you could actually say that we're in support of a easier process by keeping the one we have now, instead of making changes that complicate it, make all sorts of problems, and there's still full compliance with the federal law that you're going to have to do. So I don't look at our position as harming in any way northern Minnesota. I think the reality is that passing this bill will harm the efforts to deal with wetlands in Minnesota, because it doesn't do anything. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Anzel.
Mr. Chairman, it's not my intent to destroy the decorum in your committee, but Mr. Hottinger, you know full well, when the mines are gone, when the paper mills are gone, the people will be gone. And those of us who are privileged privileged to represent that area are going to fight you tooth and nail to make sure that that is not where we're going, whether it's in this legislative session or further down the road. So the gauntlet has been dropped.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Representative Einstein, we will work with you. We recognize the value of former Governor Perpich's suggestion that we diversify the economy. Hopefully the mines and the other positive aspects of your economy won't go away as quickly, although world trade is threatening that. The reality is we want to work with you. We want to help in any way we can to help diversify, because that is one of the ways that the North can retain those jobs. As I've said before, I went up north this summer and talked to people. I got to meet the representative's mother at the Hibbing DFL headquarters, although I didn't know that. And I'm glad I said nice things about you, Representative, while I was sitting there. I'm not ignorant of the challenge. I've been listening to that for years and understand it. But I also don't apologize for trying to find the best way to protect the environment. That's our obligation, just as it's yours, to fight hard for the people you care for and the people you represent.
Okay, we've got five more bills to get through today. Representative Anzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, but I'll pass.
Okay. Representative Mehta.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll pass for now, too.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to note, you know, for the public that, and Representative Anzel's touched on it, but in northeastern Minnesota, we have over 90% of our pre-settlement wetlands still intact. I think it's 94% somewhere in there. In the Twin Cities area, there's less than 10% of the pre-settlement wetlands intact, so we do get frustrated when we're sort of singled out as if we haven't been protecting our wetlands when we've been mining for 130 years. We constantly work on diversifying the economy, but that is no simple task, and I'm not going to get into those details right now, but we have over 90% of our pre-settlement wetlands. We have done a good job with mining for 130 years, but you know, I'm glad that the Sierra Club is supporting a less complex system and making it easier for the mining companies to do wetland mitigation. Maybe we can work together on that. Thank you.
Representative Dill.
Thank you. Well, in Senator Hottinger's testimony, he said that it was going to make the bill would make it more complicated to mitigate wetlands in Minnesota. Actually, the bill only is applicable to counties that are greater than 80%, which is a very small part of the overall state of Minnesota. And lastly, this conversation reminds me of 1964, 1975, and 1978, when they came to help us by creating the boundary waters, by further restricting it in 78, and helped us even further in 73, 74, and 75 by creating Voyageurs, an area that was so destroyed that it was still good enough to be a national park and a federal wilderness area by the people who lived there. And consequently, our towns have diminished substantially, even though we've worked hard to try and keep them going. We are seeing just continual ramifications there. So I'm here from the IRS. I'm here to help. I think that makes the point. Thank you.
Representative Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent an area that has got greater than 90% of our original pre-European settlement wetlands. I happen to live on a farm that my granddad created roughly 100 years ago. And when he did that, he did alter the landscape, and he did adjust some wetlands. Right now, the highest and best use of that would be me to mitigate the whole thing, put it into a bank, and move down here. Let me say that again. The highest and best, if you're just going to go on dollars, is for me to turn that into a wetland bank, pick my roots up, and move down here. Our county in particular, we're outside of the watershed area that we're talking about, loses tens of thousands of acres that folks cleared 100 years ago to produce food, to feed people on the face of the earth, and now the system is driving it back into mitigated wetland banks that, you know, we are on a glide slope that is going to hit us, hit 100% here over the next decade. It's right there in the numbers. So I appreciate where you folks are coming from, but it sure doesn't do anything for the folks that live in my area, because they're literally looking, trying to figure out why they should stay there because of the economics that are going on here. And, particularly when you start taking farmland that's been in production for 100 years plus, right along with the mines, right alongside of them, and turning it back into wetland, producing nothing humans eat other than deer. But anyway, you need to really understand the rest of the story for these greater than 80% counties, because we are being abused.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Pathy?
Representative, I agree that the status quo is definitely not working, and there needs to be better ways to cite wetland mitigation in northeast Minnesota and the greater than 80% counties. There is another bill that's moving through that addresses some of those issues and looks at prioritizing wetland replacement across the state and in lieu of wetland mitigation. I think it really hits on some of your concerns, and hopefully, if that continues to move forward, some of those concerns that you have would be addressed.
Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, could I
Senator Hot,
geographic Hot. Comment? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to let you folks know I'm not from the Twin Cities. So if you want to be critical of the Twin Cities, I was born and raised in southern Minnesota and lived there until relatively recently. And we have even more to apologize for in terms of not being compliant or in terms of not doing our job in protecting the wild. So.
Thank you, Senator Hodger. Thank you, Ms. Paskey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Mr. Arnosti. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Don Arnosti. I represent Isaac Walton League members across the state, including the West Libby chapter in Grand Rapids, the McCabe chapter in Duluth, the Cass County chapter in Hackensack, and many other residents of northern Minnesota where there are 80% wetlands intact. We understand that there's frustration with the status quo in terms of the manner in which wetland replacement is handled for the mining industry, and I think that's at least apparent to me based on the discussion here. However, we oppose this bill as not the right solution and inappropriate. I will not take a lot of the committee's time because I know you're on a fast schedule. I would like to just point out that the net effect of this bill, were it to pass, would be that the Corps of Engineers would be in charge of wetland replacement for the mining industry in the state. I doubt that's what the objective is, but that is what the outcome would be. That's probably not desirable from many points of view, and we are hopeful that some other ideas that are circulating and moving through the legislature will provide a more effective manner to replace wetlands while protecting our resources than this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Bob Thiemann. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Thiemann, Sudan, Minnesota, representing myself. I worked in the mines for several years and occasionally came down here to do electrical work in the cities, which I appreciated. And I would have to say that I would oppose this 30-year plan. For one thing, in the mines I worked on, I would drive out on the dikes of those leaking tailings ponds. They were leaking over 40 years ago when I worked there. They're still leaking today, degrading our public waters in the state of Minnesota. When people talk about pristine waters downstream from a mining operation, they must not be talking about the same mines where I work, because I've taken a conductivity meter. That water is degraded. The 30-year plan, I believe, is far too long to wait for us to repair existing damage. We not only replace wetlands a mining company plans to destroy, it's a way for us to repair the existing damage. The St. Louis River, the Partridge River, the Embarrass River, Sandy River, Pike River, these little rivers are degraded by mining operations. Further, I would bring up the matter of the money involved. Now, I've heard a number that it costs $25,000 an acre for mitigation. If a mining company is going to take out 1,000 acres of wetland, that's $25 million, a good amount of money. I think that money should be staying on the range. Now, we don't have details in here where the commissioner is going to approve the reclamation plan, but we've had legislation within the last week that they're talking about mitigating out of watershed, which I would oppose that, being someone who's worked in the mining industry in the Arrowhead region of Minnesota. Why should we take $25 million from our mining industry in northern Minnesota and use it to mitigate wetlands in the Red River Valley? I don't feel any need to subsidize a bunch of millionaire farmers in the Red River Valley. With that, I know I have a busy schedule. I will thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Tamman. Representative Mesa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hello, Bob. Got a quick question for you. You did mention that you had a conductivity meter. Could you explain to the folks just what that measures?
Mr. Tamman.
You know, a conductivity meter is someone that the average citizen can go out and take a quick measurement. It's not a comprehensive. It doesn't tell you what's raising your conductivity. If you're down here in the metro, right away you suspect road salt. If you're up there in our area, might be road salt. If you're downstream of a mining operation, it's probably minerals of one kind or another. So if you want to go into details, you have to go and do some expensive tests. I'm on a fixed income. I just do cheap tests. But a conductivity meter, well, give you a broad indication. What I'm seeing up north is that our lakes and rivers are below 200 microsiemens. That's a measurement. Our natural ore pits over 300. Some of our taconite discharge over 1,000. Now you're getting into violation territory when you're over 1,000 microsiemens. And of course, our cooperative regulatory agencies typically write a variance so we don't put our mining companies out of business. And I would point out that whether you're talking about conductivity or sulfate standards or whatever, the state of Minnesota has been pretty understanding. We haven't put any mining companies out of business with our sulfate standard. We put mining companies out of business because of the global mining competitiveness of the iron mining industry. Mr. Rukavina has told us many times we lost 10,000 employees, and I was probably one of them from time to time. That's why I came down here to work, and that's the way the iron mining industry is. In 1941, they created the IRRB so we could do something about our crappy economy in northern Minnesota. That was the year before I was born. They're still trying to do something about our crappy economy in northern Minnesota. And one word, diversify. And as long as we keep rebating money to the mining industry like the IRRB did last year, $12 million, over $200 million in the last 20 years, we're not going to get diversified. We're just going to keep limping along with the same old attitudes.
Representative Mesa, did that answer your question?
It was a very long, roundabout way. What I will point out is our companies have worked with the MPCA, who knows that the water is got some conductivity levels, and the EPA had worked to shut down a permit for Mesaba Nugget. And our local water quality experts did determine that it was very natural to happen in a high iron content of the water, which happens naturally up where we're at. As for the other comments, I would just like to point out a few quick things that we did invest $20 million last year in renewable wood forest products in a project called Sagetis. We put $1.5 million in a match for broadband grants. And so the TEDF fund that you're talking about is actually an incentive to get the companies in form of a tax rebate that essentially spurs them to invest. It's actually got a one-to-one match, which Representative Moline carried, and is used to get the companies to invest in new technologies, some of which could be used to clean water or other things. It's a proposal brought to us. So I wouldn't say it's a flat-out give-back because they have to invest in the economy up there. And we'll continue to work on diversifying, and that's all I have, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate Representative Metz's gracious reply, and I would add for him that they also invested some money in the Tower of Sudan Harbor, so thanks for that, too. But anyhow, I think no matter what we say, until we get away from the natural resource mentality, we're going to have the same economy we always had. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
Thank you. I'm going to be short. I want to get back to the bill and the impact of what it is to be like in an 80% or greater county or a 90% or greater county. And I know some of you have heard this in the Environment Committee, but I'm just going to read you about Coochichin County, a county that I represent with International Falls in it and a paper mill. They have 1.4 million acres of wetlands in their county. That's bigger than the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. That gross magnificently encompasses the entire metropolitan area of the state of Minnesota, including all of the additions that they've made over the years in terms of area. Larger than the Boundary Waters. If their current wetland mitigation over the last 7 years has been 3.6 acres per year. At that rate, it would take 3,889 years to consume 1%. To give a little better, I like this. I shared this with Mr. Narnosti, and we had a good laugh about it today. If Paul Revere was born in 1734 and he took up 50 acres of wetlands every single year that he's alive since 1974 and beyond, 1734 and beyond, he still wouldn't have reached 1% of the total wetlands in the county. We are in dire straits, and the wetlands arrangements do not work. We don't have economic development in those counties because of the wetlands rules, and it's exemplified and magnified by the fact that in that county, where there's a major industry, that there's only been 2.7 acres per year of wetland mitigation. That's because you can't afford it, you can't do it, you can't do it within the same watershed, because there isn't any area to speak of within that watershed to do this. And it's an example of why mining companies did what they did in that watershed, and that's what we're trying to get around, whether it's through this bill or the other bill that is being moved forward in the Environment Finance Committee. So there's a lot of people don't understand how big the elephant is in this room when it comes to wetlands, and thank you for that opportunity to elaborate on that.
Representative Louie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment for the general public. We heard a proclamation that mining had destroyed the environment, at least in the area where the testifier is from. But I would like to take this opportunity to invite folks to the Cuyuna Range Recreational Area. We've got trout lakes there now, and a mountain bike park and several other things. There's been no active mining there, I believe it's 51 years now, but those pits, most of them now support trout. So, there are things after mining. I just want to make sure that we don't leave the impression with the general public that every time we mine that the ultimate result is total destruction. You'll have to tell that to the trout because they're doing fine.
Representative Constantine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green, this is actually a question for you. Would the result of your bill be that the Army Corps of Engineers would, in fact, be in charge of the wetlands?
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is a possibility, but the reason that this bill is being laid over is because this discussion needs to be had. I would like to sit here and tell you that I don't like controversy, but I'm really pretty good at it. And we've got areas in the state now, and this will address some of the things that were brought up. You're in an area where you can't create any more wetlands. So buying land outside of those wetlands is not going to help that situation, not one bit. And so that's one of the issues that was brought up. The other thing is that this bill does not require any changes to the regulations that the mines have to follow. So keep that in mind. And the one thing that's even more important in the end, the mines are required to reclaim this land. So when they're done with it, it's still going to be of value. So it's not like it goes away. And so what I'm telling you, I guess, in a roundabout way for your question, is that we need to start addressing things on a federal level. We were elected to represent our state, and if we're just going to fold over and lay down every time the federal government puts a mandate on us, then we're not doing our job. So we have to address this.
Representative Constantine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I guess I'm not even going into that. I'm just wondering about the part about the regulation. If, as you say, it's possible, the Army Corps of Engineers might take it over, would that complicate things then for the mining companies?
Mr. Chair, if this bill were to go forward and pass before we dealt with that problem, yeah. But that's my point. We're going to get this out in the open. We need to discuss it. It's probably taking a lot longer. I apologize to the chair. He probably won't ask me for another, or let me have another hearing. But we sit back and say we can't do it because the Army Corps is going to come after us. Then we're just going to continue to get eaten up in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Tammin. No, Representative Green, it's perfectly fine. We need to discuss this. And that's why we're here. That's why I gave you the hearing, and I'm perfectly willing to listen to all sides. I think the DNR wants to come forward and say a few words. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Jess Richards, Director of Lands and Minerals, Department of Natural Resources. I will be brief. The DNR, of course, is keenly aware of the concerns both in Aiken County and in northwestern Minnesota about mitigation in those areas. Likewise, we are very alarmed and concerned about what's going on in the Iron Range right now with respect to jobs and the loss of jobs. Key tax announcement this past week is a real big deal. We do not support this bill. We don't think that that addresses those issues. We are supportive of House File 1489, which is the one that was referenced earlier. It talks about creation of an in-lieu fee that's moving through both houses. We think that's an effective bill and a great start to make some change that might be valuable for folks. Our concerns with this bill really come down to two fundamental things. Really, the fundamentals about advanced mitigation planning for wetland impacts. It's really important to wetland regulation, is that piece of it. And then secondly, of course, is I think it presents a lot of challenges for implementation on a permitting front. Certainly, the Corps of Engineers still would be involved on a federal level. And we have environmental review that also looks at wetland impacts, and to take this out of the front end advanced planning would be a challenge on that front. So that's all the comments I have.
Thank you. Questions, members? Thank you for your testimony. Representative Green, any final comments?
Mr. Chair, you've been more than gracious. I think that hopefully this conversation will go on.
Very good. Thank you. It's a good conversation to have. We do have to get this out in the open. Thank you very much for your time. The House File 1173 will be laid over. Okay. Next on the agenda, Representative Newton. The chair will move House File 243. We're going to be moving House File 243 to the Transportation Committee. Is that the motion you'd like, Representative Newton?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Very good. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, this bill provides that individuals who have received the Purple Heart will have an identification placed on their ID cards are on their driver's license, so indicating, and it will also permit them to be able to use state parks either on a day pass or an annual pass for free.
Any questions, members? Representative Metzer.
Sounds like a good idea.
Representative Luke, you have an amendment?
Yes.
A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would move the H-02438-2 amendment.
Representative Lewick moves the A-2 amendment. Speak to the amendment.
It would simply make an adjustment on line 10 and just delete the annual park permit and leave the daily park permit in there. Basically, daily park permit provides 365-day access, and that would appear to be sufficient.
Representative Newton, I think we talked about this at one point, and I don't know if you're in favor of the amendment or not, but I think it takes care of some physical concerns with the DNR.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Any discussion? Representative Urizo? To the amendment.
Yes, to the amendment. I'm just wondering what effect that would have on, there's certain circumstances when you've got an unmanned drop box for daily permits. And so how would a person qualify, you know, what would they do about that in that case?
Representative Newton?
Mr. Chair and Representative Urizo, as long as they have that indication on their ID card, that's sufficient. on their driver's license.
Yep. All in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion to the bill as amended? Anyone in the audience like to speak for or against the bill? Please come forward. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is Chuck Jones, and I've been the department commander for the Military Order of the Purple Heart for the past 2 years. I have three Purple Hearts, and I'd like to ask
Representative Lewis
what he said, because I couldn't hear him back there because he didn't have the mic on.
Representative Lewis?
Yeah, this makes a minor change, simply provides for a daily park permit.
Instead of an annual permit, a daily permit will be allowed.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion? Chair will renew his motion that House File 243 be re-referred to the Transportation Committee. All in favor of that motion as amended? All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. The bill is passed to Transportation. Thank you, Representative Newton. Representative Dill. Representative Dill moves House File 1162, and we're going to move that bill to the Environment Policy and Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You'll see in the entire bill it only adds three words, and university lands, to the exclusion. My guess is that when this bill was originally drafted, we're so routinely talking about university or school trust lands that we didn't include the PUF lands, the university lands. But Ms. Wenberg is here to explain why that this is necessary, Mr. Chairman.
Please welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Susan Carlson Weinberg, University of Minnesota Director of Real Estate. The bill before you would eliminate from the prohibition of sale of state lands on meandered lakes and other public waters and watercourses the sale of the university permanent university fund lands. In 2012, this statute 92.45 was amended to exclude the school trust lands, as has been noted, and the change that we're recommending is that the university lands be excluded, and that would allow the management of the school trust lands and the university lands in the same way.
Very good. Representative Mehta.
One quick question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Does this also take into account the tax forfeited land that the county has?
Representative Dill.
Only the exception is only currently for school trust lands, and secondly, the change as projected in the bill is only then for university lands as well. And also remember that the disposition and management of the school trust lands and permanent university lands is specified in our state constitution in Section 8.
Further discussion? Anyone in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Seeing none. Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 1162 be re-referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. The bill is passed and re-referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance. Representative Dill, you want to do it from there, or you want to take the stand? Wherever you want. Representative Anzell moves House File 1698, and we're going to move that to the Tax Committee. Is Representative Anzell, is it the Tax Committee or the Property Taxes?
Taxes would be great.
Full Tax Committee?
Full
okay.
Tax Committee.
That would be your motion.
Yep.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing House File 1698. I'm joined here by a familiar face, Mr. Dan McElroy, who represents resort owners, and Mr. Brian Harris, who owns one of those beautiful northern Minnesota resorts on one of those beautiful, pristine, cold, clear northern Minnesota lakes.
I'm going to try to distill this bill down to its basics before I turn it over to Mr. Harris and Mr. Macklin. There are a handful of resorts, privately owned resorts, in northern Minnesota. I would say the number is no more than a dozen, but I'm just guessing. And these are resorts that are on federal land, Federal Forest Service land, on lakes. These are resorts that also contain a homestead for the owner. And these are resorts that pay a lease fee to the federal government for having their resort on federal land. And they also pay property taxes on all of their buildings, all of their cabins, all of the seasonal recreation amenities. But unfortunately, in addition to the lease fee that they pay to the federal government, they also have to pay property taxes on the land, even though they don't own the land. That's the problem. And this legislation attempts to correct that inequity by exempting such properties as I've explained. And again, it would be exempting the land upon which the homestead and the seasonal recreational commercial facility, the resort, exempt that from the payment of property taxes. This would provide needed relief. It would continue our tradition of our strong resort community in northern Minnesota on those beautiful, cool, clear, deep, pristine lakes. So with that, I will turn it over to my presenters. Mr. Harris is the owner of Eagle's Nest Resort on Cutfoot Sioux, which is part of Wing.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Brian Harris, myself.
Please
thank you, Representative Van Zelk. He did a very good job of summarizing the issue. My wife and my two kids and I operate and own Eagle Nest Lodge, like he said, on Cutfoot Sioux and Big Winnie. This coming season will be our 21st year there. We have been paying property taxes on this land we don't own the whole time. Minnesota is a rare state in that occurrence, and we would sure appreciate your help fixing that.
Very good. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Resort and Campground Association. You were very close. We can count 16 leased resorts in Minnesota, principally in the Chippewa, but a couple in the Superior, and they are essentially being double-dipped. They pay a fee to the federal government that also pays counties, either a payment in lieu of taxes or a revenue share, and then again they pay property taxes. So I think Representative Van Zelk and Mr. Harris have explained that. In Part 2, or Section 2 of the bill, there are two other minor housekeeping items regarding resort property taxes. In 2012, we amended the property tax law to allow larger resorts, 4C resorts, that tax treatment, whether they were on a body of water or a state trail. We're asking in this bill to make the same change for 1C resorts. 1C are owner-occupied, homesteaded, ma and pa resorts. We're aware of two in the state out of about 810 resorts that are on state trails rather than on bodies of water. The one that we're sure applies is Trails RV Park in Walker in Cass County. It's half a mile from water, but it was built on a paved state trail, has a heavy use by bicycle riders and walkers and cross-country skiers some years. But they are now paying a much higher property tax because of this kind of unusual provision in the law. The second part of that same change, same section, clarifies that for a homesteaded resort, The resort and the home on the resort can be titled, can have related but not identical titles. We've been working on this bill for a couple years, and we have a tax court decision that fixes that, but this will make it clear to county assessors that the home and the resort, they have to have common ownership, but they don't have to be titled identically. And the current law says that the they can have homestead treatment even if the resort and the homestead have the same titled identity. One county assessor took that even then to mean only if they had that. Tax court has fixed that, but we're asking to make it clear in law. What happened in the resort in question is they took a mortgage on the home and a contractor deed on the resort. The resort was titled to their limited liability company. The home was in Mr. and Mrs. owner's name, and they were denied homestead treatment. Tax court has fixed it. We'd like to have the law consistent with the tax court finding. So those are the changes we're requesting.
Questions? Representative Constantine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't really have a problem with the bill. I'm just kind of curious as to how this came up. Can somebody go up right now and request to build, or are these all like grandfathered in from years back?
The leases.
Well, I've been trying to get this changed for 20 years since I've been at the resort, and finally found someone who would listen.
Actually, what I was asking was, how did you get on federal land in the first place?
Mr. Harris?
The Forest Service has been leasing land. They realized long ago that they were better at taking care of trees and not that good at taking care of guests, and so this was a way that they could bring people to the forest and allow them to have a great time while still doing what they do best. Many of the ski areas out west are also lease land from the Forest Service, kind of a similar arrangement.
So this is an ongoing thing. Okay, I just wanted some clarification. I was unaware of how it worked. Thank you.
Representative Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that last element there, I am familiar with at least one court case, and I just want to correct the record. While that started obviously at the assessor's level and the classification of that property, you'll find that the Department of Revenue were the ones that pushed and stood on the opposite side of the table from the plaintiff who wanted relief, and the tax court found in favor of the citizen. So in fairness to the assessors, it was our Department of Revenue that really carried the ball and forced that landowner all the way to tax court to get resolution. So, but I salute what you're doing here, and I hope this would prevent that in the future and send a signal to Department of Revenue how it really works. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lloyd.
Representative Dill.
Thank you. Well, Representative Considine, not in the Superior National Forest as well. There's a lot of this activity going on. Resorts in my district that are on federal land, as well as the ski hill, Lutzen Mountain, has a part of federal land leased for part of their ski area as well. I'm sorry. So it's fairly common in aggregate compared to the amount of forest that is in the Superior and the Chippewa. It's insignificant, but it does happen and it does occur in terms of acres of commercial activity versus resort commercial activity, ski hill activity versus the gross aggregate of the land that's available. So it is a common thing. And out west in the mountains, it's really common.
Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and testifiers, Mr. McElroy. I, too, like Rep. Considine, am curious. I'm in real estate. I'm on the property tax committee. I think it's probably something that should go to the property tax committee, but you send it to where you want it to go. But, you know, leased land, you're not the fee owner of the property. I guess I'm find it a conundrum that you'd be responsible for property taxes unless it was a negotiated term of a lease. Could you just kind of answer that curiosity for me?
Mr. Harris?
I know that the Forest Service does pay a payment in lieu of taxes to the county, and they also pay a 25% of all revenue generated to them in the county, and they gift that back to the county. So But they require, because the state requires us to pay property tax on the full value of the land, even though we don't own it, that's what we have to do.
And
Representative Hurt does.
Thank you. And is it nomenclature here? Are you really paying property tax on the improvements on the land, or are you actually paying property tax on the land?
We are paying it on both. And, of course, it's only right that I pay it on what I do own, but doesn't feel right to pay it on what I don't own.
I would agree. Thank you.
Representative Hurtas, we're going to set it to taxes. If it shouldn't go there and it should go to property taxes, I think the committee administrator will handle that at that time. Yeah. Okay. Any further discussion, members? Anyone else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Okay. Representative Van Zyl.
Mr. Chair, just one final comment. With full disclosure and transparency, I want everybody to know that my family and my extended family, all 25 of us, are very satisfied clients and customers of Mr. Harris.
Very good. Okay, Representative Van Zyl renews his motion that House File 1698 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. The bill is passed. Okay, the chair will move House File 1168, and I will move House File 1168, and then to get the bill in the shape that I like, I'm going to adopt the, I'd like to adopt the DE3 amendment, and then we'll discuss that. All in favor of the DE3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Members, this is a collection of some things that come in at the last minute, and we're trying to accommodate some folks. As you see, we've got a number of bills in the committee. Some of the bills we've laid over, they deserve to be heard. We're laying them over. Some of them don't have companions in the Senate, but folks want to be heard and have their issue heard on both sides. So we've been trying to do that here today. We're going to do some more of that tomorrow. We're up against deadlines. We thought about having this bill tomorrow, but just the way the paper shuffle works, we thought we'd have this 1168 today and put together this little omnibus bill. So that's why it's here today, and with a collection of different things that people are bringing in at the last moment. We're going to have some more, just like Representative Dill's lands bill. You have things come in at the last moment up against deadlines. We'll probably have some amendments on the House floor when we do Representative Dill's bill. I don't know, but that's usually the way things work. So we're up against deadlines, so that's what we're doing here. We've got a little bill we're going to put together. One issue here is it says that this trail, the Minnesota Valley Trail, is going to be a not going to be a paved trail, but it'll stay a dirt trail. And then the base of the 1168 bill is the next section, Section 2, the ammunition issue. And when you're deer hunting, this was brought to me by Senator Benson. She has a constituent that we both share, and they have an issue where he was ticketed for this issue where you have a handgun or some other firearm in the vehicle, or you're walking in the woods, maybe target shooting or something like that, within 5 days before the deer season, and he was ticketed. And that is correct according to current law. But this would just simply say that if you're in that situation and you didn't know the law, that the first offense would be a warning. And I think that's a proper thing to do. The next issue is a hunter survey. This was in the Game and Fish bill, I believe. We're going to put that in this bill as well. The next issue is a problem that Representative Fabian was having up on Lake of the Woods and Rainy Lake with some minnows that residents and resort owners are doing up there, and this is to alleviate that issue. And then also in the Game and Fish bill is the we're going to lift the spearing bans, and we're putting that in this bill as well. So I think we're going to have a couple other little amendments to this, but that's what's in the amendment, the delete all amendment. So I'd take questions at this time. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you.
Have you had a chance to look at the delete all amendment?
I've seen most of this language before, Mr. Chairman.
For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We do have some language that we've worked out on with Senator Benson in the Senate, clarifying this language here. So I'd like to work with you on that piece.
Absolutely.
The problem that we see here is that somebody may intentionally do this to upset their neighbor so all the deer run away. You know, so that we don't want people harassing people by doing this intentionally and just getting a warning. But we have something that Senator Benson supports. It's a pretty simple fix there.
Very good.
The other question is, Mr. Chairman, the rulemaking language in Section 5, I'm assuming that this will go to government operations then?
That's the plan, Mr. Meyer.
That's what I wanted to make sure, because we do want to get that done, and that's all in rules. So,
yep. Motion will be to send it to GovOps.
No, that's not a problem, Mr. Chair. So I think the rest of it, I know we're working with Representative Hancock on the Section 4 language, so we'll see if we need that or not. But
yeah, Representative Hancock and Representative Fabian are both brought that to me.
We're working on that issue as well. So,
very
Mr.
good.
Chairman, we're aware of this language, and I don't see any major problems with it right now.
Very good. Thank you. Representative McNamara.
What's a repealer, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Taylor, maybe you can explain that.
Mr. Chair, members, it's some rules that have some spearing bans, so it's related.
Connected with spearing. Yep. And that's in the Game and Fish Bill as well. Ms. Taylor, as long as you got the mic there, I have an amendment that I want to add as well. I think I talked to you about it. It's also part of the Game and Fish Bill. If you could explain what that was.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, as I understand it, the Chair would like to move Section 18 of House File 1406, which is the Game and Fish Bill, the first engrossment, and this had to do with the beaver seasons, and if you remember, we had amended it to accommodate the north and south zone, so it would be that language would be added to this bill.
Okay. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails, amendment is adopted. Representative Dill, you've got a couple of bills that I think you'd like to add. House File 238. Representative Dill moves the language contained in House File 238 be added to this bill as well, and that is
the veterans.
Veterans, 84 and over.
Yep.
The 84 and over language.
That would give antlerless doe permit to anyone 84 years and older statewide. The DNR testified that it could amount to 2,200 people receiving antlerless.
All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, motion prevails. Representative Dill moves the language contained. Oh, Representative E. Russo.
Since we don't have copies of any of these, or nor are they posted anywhere, I'm a little concerned about procedure here, because we don't really have transparency for the public when we just...
These bills have been heard in this committee previously. We know what they are. We have copies here if people want to see them. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, the bills that I am moving right now, and I'm about to move a second one, for the Veterans Home Deer Hunter, those have been heard in this committee and vetted and testified on by numerous people, and I'm ready to continue with moving forward the next bill that we have before us.
Okay. Anything further, Representative Urso? Representative Dill moves the language contained in House File 961 be included in this bill. Representative Dill.
And that is the Veterans Home, Minnesota's Veterans Home residents may receive an antlerless doe permit. They have to buy a license, but they may, and that could be up to 800 people. In Silver Bay, where there are more than 50 residents of the home, only two participated in that in this last hunt of the more than 50 that are in the, and I don't know how many people hunt deer at the Minneapolis Veterans Home and things of that nature, but the DNR has said it could be up to 800. There was no negative testimony on the bill, just simply that it could be as many as 800.
All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. Representative McNamara, I have a question. You brought me some language about the AIS that Representative Uglem has. We're going to hear that in your committee. Then, or do we know where that's going? What's happening with that language?
Mr. Chair, it's language from Mr. Meyer. I don't know if it's an amendment drafted in amendment form yet, or if it was in the discussion stage. I'm not exactly sure. It's in the. I actually have not even talked to Representative Uglem yet about it, to be honest.
Mr. Meyer, maybe you can elaborate on this language. You know, it's an issue that I'm concerned about, and we need to deal with this issue this session before we adjourn. So where are we at?
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR again. The language that I'm assuming you have seen and Representative Uglem has indicated to me that he supports this is language that we've pulled together based upon conversations I've had with Representative McNamara, Representative Uglem, and other folks. I have not received a consensus from the AIS stakeholders about the language yet. I've asked them to review it for committee members. Would you like me to just briefly describe it, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
What we're proposing to do is, when you get your boat registration, you get stickers for your boat, right? You get like a strip. So there's a boat sticker for each side. There's a card on there that you need to keep in your boat that has the serial number, the identification information. You sign that. We want to provide an AIS, I'm not sure what the term of it will be, another panel on that registration that would have the AIS laws and make sure that people clearly understand it's a $500 fine, things like that if you get caught, summarizing some of the things that are in the current training program and require a person to sign that as an understanding that they understand the laws, like you sign your game and fish license, and keep that in the boat. They don't have to stick it on the boat. They can keep it in their glove box. They can keep it in their pocket, just so they're getting the laws in front of them on a three-year basis and signing off on that. The other piece of it would be when you buy a non-resident fishing license, bless you, there would be information attached to that fishing license that a person would have to sign off that they understand the laws of the state of Minnesota relating to aquatic invasive species. And then we would get rid of all of the decal language. That language would be repealed, and the actual provision would go into effect beginning of the new licensing season, which it varies depending on what we're at. So it would have a couple of different effective dates. Mr. Chairman, the purpose is to provide education for people, make sure they have an understanding of the laws, and to deal with the non-resident people. It doesn't get at the non-resident boaters, which some of the stakeholders want to see. But it's one possibility in this AIS decal discussion. So.
Mr. Meyer, what does that do for, I mean, that's okay for a boat owner, but I mean, there's a lot of people that aren't boat owners that are boating and putting boats in and out of the lake. I mean, how do you get to those people? I mean, that doesn't really solve that problem.
Mr. Chairman, all of the lakes have signage at the boat ramps. I mean, if you look
that's
at the signage there, it's.
That's fine.
It's just like other things. If someone borrows your ATV or your snowmobile, they don't necessarily need to know the laws either. I mean, it's. I understand your concern, but you know, this is trying to get at the people who own boats, making sure that they're aware of it, and if they borrow somebody's boat, there's no penalty associated with it or anything like that. So,
Representative Urizo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the short boats still be exempt from that then? The ones that don't have to be licensed now?
Mr. Chair, anything that needs to be registered they would just get this information and sign it, so there's not a big, huge requirement on that. But it would only be for boat watercraft that are registered by law in the state of Minnesota. Duck boats would be exempt, for example.
Mr. Meyer, do you care to elaborate on who the stakeholders might be?
Mr. Chairman, we have an aquatic invasive species task force that the commissioner appoints. So there's membership there working with the Minnesota Rivers and Lakes Association, other interested lake associations throughout the state, Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. Those are primary. And then the Resort Campground Association and Congress of Minnesota Resorts are the groups that I've been involved with having discussions on this bill and the legislature as well.
Mr. Meyer, just, you know, when you do that, and I realize that we have a horrible problem here, but try to reach out to real people, not just people who have an axe to grind or are part of some club or organization. The more organized we get, the less I have confidence in what we end up doing sometimes.
Mr. Chair, I know some people I can reach out to and get there.
Okay. Common sense, you know.
Mr. Meyer, I'd appreciate it if you came to me with some language that you worked out with Senator Benson so we can offer that in government operations.
Mr. Chair, I will forward that to you tonight.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion?
Yeah.
Okay, Chair will renew his motion that House File 1168 be sent, as amended, be sent to the Government Operations Committee. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion prevails. 1168 is passed. Members, we'll have our last committee hearing tomorrow. If you have any issues or amendments or bills or anything that you want to do, tomorrow's the last day. So hopefully we can take care of it tomorrow. Wrap
Thank
things
you,
up.
Chair.
Thank you. Meeting adjourned.